You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I've got a sticky situation, which is kind of an amusing thing, except 21 people died.
Oh, I have an old piece of paper about which no one died.
Date fight!
Hello there. Welcome to Date Fight. It's the show that takes great moments from history and pitches them against each other. Sort of, where am I? What day is it?
No,
I know what day
what
it is.
It is.
It's the 15th of January, and this is definitely day five.
He's Jake, yeah. I'm Nat Tapley, and together we will be trawling through whatever trawlers trawl, probably oceans, to pull the finest fish and
plastic
historical squid out and to watch them die on the deck of our entertainment.
Beautiful. More beautiful imagery. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
Round one.
I will go to the 15th of January, 1759, and the opening of the British Museum.
Oh.
The first public national museum in the whole wide world, which now contains 13 million objets.
Oh.
It was taken from the collection of Sir Hans Sloane, who, it keeps saying, he bequeathed his collection to the state in exchange for £20,000. Now, that doesn't sound like bequeathing it. That sounds like selling it.
Flogged
to
it.
Me.
So, here's what's happened. He's got a lock-up with quite a lot of nicked swag in it.
Yeah.
And he's fenced it off to the government.
Even worse than nicked swag, he bought all his 71,000 objects by marrying the widow of a wealthy Jamaican planter.
Oh.
So this is all slave money that bought all the original collection, including 40,000 books and 7,000 manuscripts.
It gets so much better.
It gets so much better after that, because we hadn't started nicking stuff by then, because to begin with, it was mainly a library. And then what it doesn't say on their website about how they went from 71,000 objects to 13 million objects is the fact that the growth of the British Museum coincided pretty exactly with the ability of British men to be able to go anywhere in the world and steal things at gunpoint.
Hmm.
So in 1778, they had a hugely popular display of objects from the South Seas brought back by Captain Cook. And pretty much every year after that, they went around the world nicking stuff and keeping it. That's why we've got it all. In fact, the Elgin Marbles, we named after the person who nicked them. Mm. They're not even named after where they were found. The Greeks called them the Parthenon marbles, not us. Elgin marbles. Why? Because Elgin nicked them.
But, Nat, hang on a second. Because, yes, historically, terrible, terrible things happened, but there's a little thing called restitution and justice and appeasement and apology. And the restoration of of what is right. And well, how are we doing with that?
Well, we're doing dreadfully with that. I mean, it's been particular. Well, because there is a very specific legal reason why the British Museum don't want to give anything back to anyone, because they say it would undermine the entire concept of the ownership of most of their collection. And rightly so, I think. They think that it would really legally undermine. So if they give anything back, then they're essentially conceding, we don't really own any of this. But what they could do, perhaps, is give it on indefinite loan, or they don't take the money from one of their, let's say, their BP sponsorship and use that to tour it around the countries where they came from. I don't know. There are other options for them rather than just giving them back. But they are very keen not to just give things back, because that would mean, essentially, they don't own anything, and the British Museum would just be an empty building.
I'm seeing, well, you call it an empty building. I'm seeing Westfield Bloomsbury.
say escape park.
The biggest escape room in history.
Yeah. But so that's the opening of the British Museum. It's obviously hugely influential and full of human remains which we stole from around the world.
Ta-da! You're welcome, Yay! World!
Yes. But we did invent the idea of going around the world nicking things. First public national museum, so,
yeah.
You know, you're welcome.
Yeah, yeah. It's another great moment to be a British person. On this podcast.
History's full of those.
I sincerely hope that this entire podcast series is sort of taken by its consumers as just a huge, epic apologia for...
I hope so, I hope.
...all of the shockingly bad things that we've done.
It would be terrible to feel this apologetic every day and yet not to be apologising.
Yeah, I apologise.
Yeah, we both apologise very much. In fact, this should be on the curriculum.
Yeah.
Just for everyone.
Yeah. That said, I'm going to take you back to the 15th of January 1919 and invite you to have a bit of a chuckle at some people who died because they died in molasses, Nat.
Oh.
So this was the great molasses...
Does this start funny then get horrific?
It starts funny and then it gets horrific. Yeah. In fact, it doesn't last very long in the funny bit. I tell you what...
Did they come to a sticky end?
Yeah, I mean, they drowned in boiling hot molasses, if that's your...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. So this was in Boston...
Tell me the story.
Okay, well, this is in Boston, Massachusetts. It's in 1919, and a wave of molasses is released from an exploding storage tank. This is 24 million pounds of molasses. It is a staggering amount of molasses. You might be thinking to yourself, why do they need that much molasses? I mean, you only make Christmas cake once a year. It's the only time you use it.
Yeah.
But you can ferment molasses and you can make ethanol, the active ingredient in alcoholic beverages, and also a key component in munitions. Oh. So drinking and fighting. Where would we be without molasses for that?
Molasses.
So the... The theory is that what they did is they had these massive storage tanks of molasses.
Yeah.
And they were dumping more into a tank. And what they would do is they would heat the molasses to make it, literally to make it runny.
So it didn't stick to everything as they poured it in.
Yeah. And then they'd have a crane with this massive 40-foot index finger that would just wipe down the spoon and then suck it. All of the townsfolk would gather to suck the finger. But what happened was they think that the hot molasses made the cold molasses expand. There wasn't room in the tank and kaboom. Apparently the ground shook and they heard a roar as this tank collapsed. They said it sounded like an elevated train.
Had these people ever heard an elevated train?
It seems like an odd thing
for them to choose.
I don't think it's that.
It sounds like one of those modes of transport we don't have in Boston.
Oh, don't make me look up whether or not. I really can't be bothered. But
is that like some people horses?
Said it sounded. They said it sounded like machine gun fire as the rivets shot out of the tank.
Wow,
this is pure Hollywood stuff, right? So. It's 40% more dense than water, and it had a lot of energy. And this turned into a wave of molasses that was 25 feet high.
What? How big was the storage tank?
It was 24 million pounds of molasses moving at 35 miles an hour. You could not outrun this.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, and here's a detail for you. The wave was strong enough to drive the burst tank against the girders of the adjacent Boston Elevated Railways Atlantic Avenue structure. Okay.
So actually, they'd heard that sound. It just sounded like an ordinary L train.
They'd heard it a lot. They're like, oh, train's a bit early today. Woof!
Yeah. Oh!
So it was horrendous. This is the Boston Post said, molasses waist deep covered the street and swirled and bubbled about the wreckage. Here and there struggled a form. Whether it was an animal or a human being was impossible to tell. Only an upheaval, a thrashing about in the sticky mass showed where any life was.
Ooh.
Horses died like so many flies on sticky flypaper. Isn't that horrific?
It is.
So, yeah, lol, and then I feel like a terrible person.
Yeah. Although that last metaphor does then sort of reveal the hypocrisy of our attitude to horses with regard to our attitude to flies, which are more than happy to stick to
flypaper.
Well,
I will say that winter, horse in molasses was the dish du jour in every restaurant.
imagining a haunch like a toffee apple that you're sort of biting.
Yum. Sticky ribs. It's apparently, even after the cleanup, for decades afterwards, on a hot day, Boston smelled of molasses.
Wow. That's quite something.
Yeah. Well, I could wish it smelled of that now. I can't imagine.
Hmm. Well, so whereabouts in the city was it? Was it in the old bits or in the new bits?
Well, it would have been in the old bits. It was by the port, I think.
Right.
It was because it was a ship, I think, was unloading some molasses.
24 feet high? That still seems like a lot of molasses to me.
That's an unbelievable amount of very hot molasses.
If we can say anything about this story, it's that was a lot of molasses.
And a lot of malads all died.
Shall I do the birthdays? Happy birthday to Molière, Jean-Baptiste Poquelin, playwright who died just after a performance of his The Imaginary Invalid, in which he had played a hypochondriac who thought he was so ill he was going to die. I mean, he had to die after some play. It's probably not that exciting. Happy birthday to Sofia Kovalevskaya. She was a Russian mathematician and the first woman to get a full professorship in Northern Europe. She was also the first woman to edit a scientific journal. However, her life was very 19th century Russian, in that her alcoholic husband was exiled for his radical politics before committing suicide, and then she died at 41. So happy birthday, Sofia Kovalevskaya. Also happy birthday to Claudia Winkleman, whose autobiography should be called Beyond the Fringe, even if it isn't. She can have that.
You can have that. Oi, do you know you why I did my cab the other day? I had Claudia Winkleman in it. I said, here, when you do your autobiography, I said, you can have that. Do you know what she said? Do you know what she said?
She just drove off.
She said, do you know what she said? She said, brilliant.
Happy death day to Chaktoichkak the First, the great jaguar paw, head of the Maya city of Tikal. He died on the day that Siajkak, a war leader for Teotihuacan, the spear thrower owl, arrived in Tikal, probably because he killed him. Happy death day to Ite of Kilidi, an Irish nun who was said to embody the six virtues of Irish womanhood. Any guess as to what the six virtues of Irish womanhood are, Jake? No, that's a trap. Don't even try.
Thank you. It is. I appreciate your rescue. I'm happy to forfeit today's fight for your rescue there. Thank you.
Wisdom, purity, beauty, musical ability, gentle speech. Oh. And needle skills.
Wowzers.
Yeah. She fostered St. Brendan, but she died when a beetle ate her side and grew to the size of a pig.
What?
I have no idea. Some people think this may be a metaphor for cancer. I like to think it's a big beetle who ate her side and grew to the size of a pig.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the latter camp.
Yeah. Also happy...
That actually happened to a mate of mine.
Happy death day to Rosa Luxemburg, the socialist revolutionary who didn't like the Bolsheviks. She criticised the Bolsheviks, but during the revolutions in Germany in 1919 to 20, she was taken prisoner in Berlin and killed without trial and shot in the street by Captain Pabst. So happy death day, Rosa Luxemburg. And those are the death days.
Excellent. Before we go on the death days, though, who was the one that died? The general from the tribe thing?
Oh, Chaktoichkak. Happy death day to Chaktoichkak the First.
Yes. I'm going to be talking about that tomorrow.
Are you? Yes, yes.
I expect you are
that
too.
That does appear twice in these online repository of information.
Yes.
I didn't notice that.
But it's a good story.
Yeah, we can say it took him a day to die. Or he died a day early.
But I think I might get you to do all the pronunciations there, because that was impressive.
That was just me adding clicks to saying it. Talking to luck.
I'm the one who has to edit this podcast.
Yeah.
January the 15th, 1910.
Yes.
Mm. And construction is completed on the Buffalo Bill Dam.
Oh.
They weren't damming Buffalo Bill. It wasn't some medical...
I was going to say, was he flooding?
This is the tallest dam in the world at the time of its completion. 99 metres high.
Being 7 feet high.
In the saddle. So it's quite a landmark, and it was used to obviously irrigate the surrounding arid countryside. Mm. But it made me interested in Buffalo Bill, because I was like,
yes.
is he someone we should celebrate? Is that a thing? And yes,
Buffalo Bill Cody, is he a goodie or is he a baddie?
He's very much a white hat.
Oh.
He was quite a good guy. He supported the civil rights of Native Americans.
Hooray!
He employed many of them and gave them good pay.
Hooray! Is it by putting them in a freak show, though? I mean, that was a muted hooray.
Yeah, well, kind of, yeah. He had a sort of Native American aquarium, if you like.
By implicitly othering them, he promoted their rights.
Yay! But no, he described them as the former foe, present friend, the American.
Oh.
Which is pretty egalitarian.
It is.
And he once said, "Every Indian outbreak that I have ever known has resulted from broken promises and broken treaties by the government."
Mm. Which, in some ways, again, is very, very worthy. But he does say Indian outbreak, which...
Yeah, oh, okay, all right, yes, I know.
Implicitly makes them a virus.
But you've got to contextualise it.
Yes, I am. Well done, Buffalo Bill, and your dam.
And he also supported the rights of women.
Oh.
He said, "What we want to do is give women even more liberty than they have." Yes, ladies. We're going to give you...
Even more.
We... Yeah. The men are going to give you more liberty. But he said, let them do any kind of work they see fit. And if they do it as well as men, give them the same pay.
Oh, well done.
But then he was a Freemason and he became a Knight Templar, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, one of the weird new ones, not a proper Knight Templar.
And the dam's all very well, but what more fitting tribute could there be than
a dental
to
dam.
Have... Locomotive number one, named after you at Euro Disneyland Railroad. Just imagine. It's exactly what he would have wanted.
Bet Jacques Cousteau is fuming.
Well, yes, because of his work with Aquaria.
Yeah.
But it was just Native Americans.
No. Well, that was a very nice story. Good to know that Buffalo Bill wasn't as awful as everyone else in the 19th century, apparently.
I mean, it's a very low benchmark.
He managed not to abuse other humans for a brief period. Well done, Buffalo Bill Cody. I'm going to take you to the 15th of January, 1962, and the discovery of Greece's oldest papyrus, the Derveni Papyrus, which was found.
I was hoping you would.
Oh, you're looking forward to the fascinating story of the Derveni Papyrus.
I genuinely was. I just thought, oh, that looks really hard. And then you did it, which is brilliant. Thanks, mate.
Well, it was written during the reign of Philip II of Macedon. It was a philosophical treatise, but we're not really sure about that, because the only reason it survived, Greece has very humid earth, apparently. So no papyruses survived from the era because it just rotted away. Except for this one, because this one was put on someone's funeral pyre, and so it was burnt. So essentially you've got a black piece of paper with black ink on it, and we've worked out that it was a philosophical treatise about an allegorical comedy from the 5th century BC.
Good Lord. Apparently.
And it's the oldest written document, paper document, from Europe ever. There we go. So that's what we got. It was carbonised in the funeral pyre. It survived, but is illegible. But it is the oldest surviving manuscript in the Western tradition and the oldest papyrus within Greece.
And it was someone's sitcom script. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Almost certainly it was.
The one thing we definitely need more of.
Yeah. Well, if you do need more, I've got a big drawer full
of... Yeah, we all have, mate, yeah. What's the legacy of this generation going to be? Chicken bones and sitcom scripts?
Yeah. Well, it's pictures for podcasts now.
Oh, yeah, of course, podcasts, yeah.
It's an auditory wave will just be filling the past. Noise like this, polluting everyone's brains. Speaking of polluting your brains, we'll be back tomorrow with more brain pollution.
Yes, we will, but you need to decide which one out of which of us were who.
Is it the British Museum? Is it Buffalo Bill? Is it Boskin's molasses disaster? Or is it Greece's oldest papyrus? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
Well, you do, because you can now vote. We're voting every day now for who you feel won. And then we're going to toss up at the end of the week and work out who the week's winner is on Sundays.
Yes. Do you want to know the score so far?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I do. I really do. But I don't want to cloud the way people vote today.
Oh, really?
Perhaps I do. Perhaps I do. I don't know. If you go to @date_fight on Twitter, you can vote there.
Yes, or facebook.com/datefight. You can vote there.
I mean, the very fact that you weren't really bringing the vote part up is making me feel like this is interesting.
Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. Nothing more to do here.
Do vote. It's so important, guys. Well, all right.
Is it just yet another example of the way in which we look to democracy to fulfil the emptiness in our souls that an absence of moral fibre can't fill?
It's literally because I shout leave means leave every other episode. Leave means leave. Do vote, and we'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.